Today's Hay Show will be on case 27 in the Book of Serenity. Phion points to a blind. When the teachers are many, the line is confused. When laws are issued, crime is born. Through curing sickness where there is no sickness may be extreme kindness. Though curing sickness may be extreme kindness, how does going by the rule where there is a rule preclude citing a story? Phaon pointed to a blind. The two monks went at the same time and rolled up the blind. Phaon said, one gain, one loss. Verse. Pines are straight, brambles are crooked, cranes are tall, ducks are short. In the age of the ancient emperors, people forgot about both government and anarchy. Such peace, a hidden dragon in the abyss. Such freedom, a soaring bird sheds its tether. Nothing can be done about the patriarchs coming from the west. Within, gain and loss are half and half. Reeds go along with the wind, turning in the air. The boat cuts off the flow and reaches the shore. Spiritually sharp mendicants here observe Phaon's method. Picture of a person, not necessarily a monk, but he is very interested in what he's heard about in Zen. And he's wandering around because he needs a teacher. And maybe he's visited a few temples. And he comes on this temple and he comes in and the teacher is sitting with his monks about him. And all of a sudden, and he's watching, he's observing, and he, all of a sudden the teacher points to a blind, and two monks jump up, and they run, and they both raise the blind. And then the teacher just looks and he says, one gain, one loss. Well, that's confusing, to say the least. And he's thinking to himself, and then he looks around and he sees another monk sitting there make a face at his friend. And he thinks, I wonder what's going on here. I think maybe this guy is a little bit partial. Maybe he likes that one monk better than the other monk. And so, I don't know if I want him for a teacher. Maybe another monk who's sitting in the group, maybe he's thinking. He's been around for a little while, but not that long, and he really is not deeply into practice yet. But he's read a little bit, and he thinks about things, and he really feels like he's learned a lot. And he's thinking to himself, Now, I've read verses on the faith mind, and it says in there, gain and loss, right and wrong, such thoughts must be abolished. I wonder how much this teacher really knows about something. I wonder if I should stick with him or maybe go find somebody else. And of course, the monk that's sitting there making a face, he's probably annoyed. Something the teacher did bothered him. And he's thinking, that's typical. So nobody really has a good picture of what's going on here. Maybe some do, but they're the ones that aren't saying anything. And this is kind of how it is with us, I think. We we kind of have a filter that we look at things through, and it always looks like we have the whole picture, but, and we make judgments based on that. In fact, a lot of our lives progress and develop from these judgments that we make about things. And we're always looking through this filter that's kind of invisible. Very invisible. And it has something to do with how we see things in the moment. Most of us, probably everybody's heard of first nen, second nen, third nen. The moment is not all one thing. It's actually a process. It's so fast. It happens so quickly that we think of it as being just one thing, but it really isn't. And first nen, when I think of first nen, I just thought of this a few minutes ago. There was a book I read a long time ago, and I have it home, but I can't even remember the name of it now. But it was written by a psychologist who spent his whole professional life studying babies and very, very young children. And he studied their relationships with their mother. But I remember the very beginning when he's talking about an infant, and I still don't know how he figured this out or what made him realize this was the case, but he described how infants see. I think he used light coming through a window, dancing on something, as an example, one of his examples. But first nen, the way I understand it, always makes me think of how I saw the world when I was, say, 2 months old. I mean, you don't have any words, you don't have any labels, you have nothing. Nothing that tells you what you're looking at. All you're seeing is, you're just seeing. You don't even know you're separate yet. Or you're not separate, but you haven't even come to the point where you start feeling yourself as a separate, something separate from everything else. That's how I think of first nen. Little by little we learn to put labels on things. Some of the labels can describe things pretty well, others we just put on them. But that is my understanding of second nen. I'm sure it's a lot more involved than that. Third nen is where I think we start to get into trouble, because that's when we respond to the things we see. We respond in an emotional way, either positively, negatively, or neutrally. But responses aren't bad in themselves, but sometimes we can really get caught up in, well, we've heard this, a lot of these expressions I use over and over again. That's how we get caught up in these loops, because our responses become habits. They're not spontaneous anymore. When they can stay spontaneous and we can just move through them and get on with it, that's okay. But when we get hung up in them, that's when we separate ourselves from, in a way that's not healthy. So third nen is where we all end up to some extent with healthy responses and a certain number of unhealthy responses. And this is what comes out in our everyday life, and and creates our life for us, actually. In our personal life, in our relationship with ourselves, in our relationship with those around us that we care about, that we know know well, with strangers. And when enough people get together with the same kind of unhealthy response to the world, that's when you have war. That's when you have political unrest. That's when you have all these major problems that just seem to take over and spoil everything. So this is why we need to come here. This is why, in a way, I mean, there's probably more than one way to deal with this, but this is the best way I've found so far for myself. This is why we come to Sesshin. We've heard this expression over and over and over again. It's Karma Hospital. It is Karma Hospital. There's so many obstacles. There's so many obstacles that hold us back. That monk that just looked up at his teacher and made a face. Unfair. Unfair. That can become a way of looking at everything in life. Not just something that we notice once in a while when something doesn't seem to be right. It can become our whole way of looking at the world all the time. Whether we consider it to be giving us what we expect we should, what we think we should have, or even other people. And out of this, I think, comes our perception of what, well, not fairness, but justice. I mean, justice in the world, too. This is at the bottom of a lot of unhappiness and dissatisfaction. So, Karma Hospital is where we come, and the way we learn to deal with a lot of this that we see to some degree inside ourselves, but not really clearly, is to sit down on the cushion and to watch our breath. Such a simple thing. Who could imagine that something like that could change everything? And yet, it really can. Over time, we can when we come here and we do this, when we do this practice over and over again, and we take it home and we do it over and over again, over time it changes us. It very gradually softens us and wears away at obstacles. We become more aware of our obstacles. We become more aware of our obstacles as they are, not as we've seen things right along, but things become more clear. We lose the judgment that we've always attached to the way we look at ourselves and the way we look at other people. And little by little, we lose them. So coming to Sesshin and working with our breath on the cushion and doing this practice creates a loss or a sense of loss for us. We do lose something by doing this, or we seem to. That's what we seem to lose something. But over time, as we continue to come to Sesshin, as we continue to do this, we might notice that something changes in our life. We might notice that somehow the people we're living with seem a little different. We might not make this connection right away, but it does happen. Over time, it does happen. People around us that are around us a lot kind of change a little bit with us, I think. They don't realize what's happening. They may not even understand anything that we're doing, but their responses to us change. And they don't, as I say, they might not realize it, we might not realize it right away. But all of a sudden, a couple of years down the road, after we've been practicing a while, we might look at somebody that we've been living with or been in a very close relationship with, or a friend, and all of a sudden we realize the way we're interacting is not exactly the way it's been before. It's not totally different, but it is different to a degree. And so I've come to think of Sesshin as not just Karma Hospital, but I've come to think of it as Bodhisattva School. I think we're all here, whether we realize it or not, to learn how to be in a different way with people, with ourselves. And it's more than just losing something in bear with me. It's more than just losing something in a karma hospital. It's gaining, it seems to be gaining something. It's something that was always there, but we couldn't see it before because of whatever, our fear or our hate or anger or, and as those obstacles wear away, we begin to see the compassion in ourselves. We begin to see the really deep love that we have for people that maybe was disguised before. And that is the beginnings of being in Bodhisattva School, as I like to think of it, because that is what my understanding of bodhicitta is. We're beginning to really want this. We see the responses that are different, and we're really beginning to want to wake up. And so the energy becomes, we become more open, the energy opens up, and we practice maybe with more diligence, more intensity. What seems to develop is, yes, we learn to look at our family with more compassion, and we start feeling more compassion back from them. But also, there is something called skillful means that develops. That's, I think, really important in becoming or learning to be a bodhisattva. Skillful means being in a situation and not figuring anything out necessarily, but just from inside yourself someplace, reacting or responding to the situation in a way that will turn it towards enlightenment. that will turn it towards waking up for everyone involved in the situation. Now, it doesn't seem to me that, I mean, we can all think of so many situations where this seems like such an impossible thing. It doesn't mean to me that everyone becomes enlightened or wakes up. What it means to me is that something changes in the situation to lessen whatever the intensity of whatever the negative activity or is going on in between people. Something happens, and it comes from inside a person who is involved, usually, maybe not even really directly involved, but they just have the means to start responding. And how they respond, maybe they do have to think it out a little bit, but how they respond just makes a difference. Maybe all the problems don't go away. But it makes a difference. It makes a beginning. It causes something to change very, very slightly, maybe. And it causes people who are maybe locking horns or totally feeling separate from each other or the world to maybe even just for a few instants to lose that separation. And so that's, I think, what we learned. That's what I recognized here. If you've been here for many years, you probably have recognized it too. It's here tremendously. This is the place to come and see it in action and know that it's there. That was my experience. But then you can go out and leave here and find it in other places. And if you keep practicing, just watching the breath and going into your mu or working with your koan, this is what I believe will happen for all of us, for every one of us. Bodhisattva school is a loss too, because when someone, again, the way I understand it, when someone actually does become a bodhisattva, they lose themselves. That's how they do it. They lose themselves. And so, gain and loss. What do we gain? What does anyone gain? If you're working with your obstacles and you're letting go of them and you're dissolving them, you're losing them. If you think of yourself as being in bodhisattva school, you're ultimately going to lose yourself in a certain way. So who gains? Where's the gain? The gain is for everyone. The gain is for everyone. Everyone gains when one person wakes up or is on the road to waking up in a big way, is practicing really deeply, and everyone gains. Everyone that person comes in contact with will, and maybe nobody even realizes it's happening most of the time, but everyone that person comes in contact with will feel that, will understand, will know it in a certain way. And it will change everyone. Ultimately, I really believe that if people are looking for justice or fairness in a bigger sense, in, you know, where they live or in the country they live in or in the whole world, that's where it's going to come from. It's going to come from people who learn to respond from the heart, mind. I'm not saying it's not important to figure things out, and I'm not saying it's not important to be actively involved in change. We couldn't do without that. We certainly couldn't do without that. But I think for change to be the most, for change to come about in the deepest, most profound way, I think we need people to be responding with their minds, responding and figuring things out, but also responding deeply from a place that has nothing to do with thinking. This is how I see. I think every time we learn to do that, even a little bit, we roll the blind up a little bit in the world. I think it's just so important. And I think the gain and the loss are together, work together in a very big way. Because as we lose our obstacles, as we lose ourselves in practice, by practicing deeply, I think every instant that happens, there's gain. I think it's all one thing. The verses on the faith mind say that. It's not two. It's never two. It's all one thing, flowing. I think justice, you know, I think the perception of justice or fairness is, well, there's many different perceptions of it, but a lot of them revolve around somebody getting exactly what he's entitled to. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. That kind of thing is the extreme of it. I don't think everybody thinks that way anymore, but certainly a lot of people still do. It's a very rigid stance. But there's all levels of it. People get married or people are in relationships and they think in terms of 50-50. 50%, I'll give 50%, and you have to give 50%. But the reality of that is, it's 100-100. If you're in any kind of relationship with another person, whether it's a friendship or a marriage or a partnership or a boss and, you know, boss and his workers, for the full benefit of that relationship to happen, it has to be 100% from both or all. 100% may not be 100%. Some people can give 40%. Some people can give 60%. If that's the situation, then for the relationship to continue, you have to accept that. And if one of those people in that relationship practices deeply, develops skillful means to work in that relationship, those numbers can change dramatically, I think. Same with almost any relationship you can think of. It may vary. What someone can give in a relationship may vary at different times, depending on a lot of circumstances. Sometimes a person can give 100%. Other times, somebody is ill, somebody is, has emotional problems. Those are very, very long-standing kinds of difficulties, but somebody has a bad day and they come home. Well, maybe most of the time they can give 80%, but today it's only 20. Okay, maybe a conflict can arise because of that, but on the other hand, if the person that's home waiting or one of the two people has developed this ability to work in situations both with their mind but also with their heart, to respond, not necessarily to figure it out, but just to respond according to what's going on, that 20% in a very short time can rise up and become 40% again. So there's nothing simple about this. And there's no clear-cut answers. It's a flow, as we've heard again many, many times. Life is a flow. And we're always changing, and this is the one, in my whole life, this is the one firm practice that I have found that can respond to anything. Not saying I'm capable of totally accepting all the responses. I'm a work in progress, that's for sure, but I can recognize it. And that is a big part of it. You're in Karma Hospital for sure. But you're also in Bodhisattva school. And you can't separate those two things. It's all one. It's not two. They all keep flowing. It all keeps flowing together. And sometimes I can recognize certain things and go with it, and I'm better. That's my 80% day. Other times, maybe not so much, and other times I have a really hard time. But the whole thing is to just keep going with it and not have any real goals or expectations of what's going to happen at a certain time. That's one of the things I do. I keep setting these little goals, and then when I can't meet them, I get upset. But I'm learning not to do that so much. So it's a back and a forth, and I see it. It's like trying to roll up this blind. This koan is actually in the mumokan too. Names have changed, but the story is the same. And in one of the comments in that book was that the blinds should fall from heaven. And that's the hope. That's really the hope. Someday the pain of life will always be there, as long as the body is living and breathing. But the suffering doesn't have to be. And I know, even in the midst of it, when at the worst of it, that it's all there because of me. I know that now. That's something I didn't really know 10 years ago. And I'm very grateful for that. Even if I can't, even if whatever situation I'm in, okay, fine, it's me, so what? And, you know, I'll still make the same mistakes for a while, but that the practice will continue. And at the end of it all, hopefully, I'll be able to eliminate most of it. When teachers are many, the line is confused. When laws are issued, crime is born. That's what makes me think of the misperception that we have of what should be, of what justice should be. We can make laws and actually make things worse for people through doing that. We don't think of it in terms of what it really is, which is a flow that's obstructed. That's what, to me, injustice is. Injustice is when the flow of life becomes obstructed in some way. And the solution is to find a way through skillful means to take that obstruction away, to dissolve it. Our obstructions are our second great vow. There's many ways to read it, but it is the one that I like a lot, that I use a lot myself, is we know it's delusion. But greed, hatred, and ignorance rising endlessly, I vow to abandon them. It doesn't say I vow to do away with them. We can't. And it doesn't say I vow to fight them to the death until they're gone. It says simply I vow to abandon them, and abandon them, and keep abandoning them. And those around me, and as I get better at it, those around me will see me, will notice. People I come in contact with will notice me abandoning them in some way, even when I don't do it perfectly. They'll see me trying. When teachers are many, the line is confused. When laws are issued, crime is born. Though curing sickness where there is no sickness may be extreme kindness, how does going by the rule when there is a rule preclude citing the story? Fayan pointed to a blind. The two monks went at the same time and rolled up the blind. Fayan said, one gain, one loss. They rolled up the blind at the same time. We have to be those monks. We have to be in a karma hospital at the same time we're in Bodhisattva school, and it's all one thing. the story of pointing at, oh, pines are straight, brambles are crooked, cranes are tall, ducks are short. In the age of the ancient emperors, people forgot about both government and anarchy. They forgot about judging. I think that's what it's saying. They forgot about looking at things in terms of what should I have and what does he should he have and what should do I deserve that I'm not getting. That's how I see that. Such peace, a hidden dragon in the abyss. Such freedom, a soaring bird sheds its tether. Nothing can be done about the ancestors coming from the West. Within gain and loss are half and half. Reeds go along with the wind, turning in the air. Everything's a flow. Everything is flowing all the time. Everything is affecting everything else. No one individual can take control and make things happen according to what that person's thinking all the time. That's not the best way, even when it's good. The best way is for things to flow back and forth freely and interact with each other and skillful means. Turning always towards waking up. Always having that as the way of living in the world. Or trying as hard as we can. The boat cuts off the flow and reaches the shore. Okay, we've heard the analogy of the raft going from shore to shore, and then you throw it away when you get to the other side, when you get there. But on the way over there, the current can get pretty strong. Obstacles can, well, greed, hatred, and ignorance rising up endlessly, endlessly. They'll always be there. They'll always rise up. Abandon them. We have to just keep abandoning them. The boat cuts off the flow and reaches the shore. Spiritually sharp mendicants here. Observe Fayon's method.